Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is chapter 13 of the book of Bamidbar and the Wilderness, a.k.a. Numbers. And it starts out, verse 1 actually says, and Yehoah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. So here come the words in red. As you know, that is not the name of the Torah portion yet, because he says that fairly frequently. Got to find something unique. So here we go. Shelach lecha. Well, that sounds unique. And shelach, we know that word. It's the same word as to send out. Adam and Eve were sent out when a wife puts away. That same word is shelach. A wife, when a branch is put out from a tree, that same word is shelach. In this case, it's send out men, that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one of them, a prince among them. Now, one other quick note here, and sometimes it's almost like it's a joke, but if nothing else, it's an easy way to remember at least one Hebrew word. This word for spy, as it turns out, is tour. The way folks tend to want to remember it is, yeah, send out some tourists to tour out the land. So the spies are tourists. Not that funny, but at least the word is easy to remember that way. So they're going to go be tour in the land, which I give unto the Bani Israel, like we said, and they're going to go do this. Moshe, it says, sent them from the wilderness of Paran according to the commandment of Yahuwah. So they're going because Yah said to do it. All of them men who were heads of the tribes, the children of Israel. Here were their names. Okay, so we got again of Reuben, Shammua, son of Zakur, of Simeon, Shaphat, son of Hori, of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. And remember, that's an interesting one. The turns out that Caleb evidently is grafted in, and he was not born into the tribe of Judah, but that word in the Hebrew actually means dog. So at this point, he has been elevated to a position of leadership. We're going to see a whole lot more out of this man as we go through the rest of the Torah and on into the next book. Of the tribe of Issachar, Egal, son of Yosef. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun. There's another name we might recognize. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, son of Raphu. Of the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, son of Sodi. And Gadiel, I like that. El is my fortune, right? Gad, fortune. And Gadiel, my fortune is of El. Of the tribe of Joseph, namely from Manasseh, we got Gadi, this time son of Susi, tribe of Dan, Amiel, people of El, right, son of Gamali. Of the tribe of Asher, Setur, son of Michael. Of Naphtali, Nabhi, son of Vofsi. And of the tribe of Gad, Geuel, majesty of El, son of Machi. These are the names of the men that Moshe sent to tour out, spy out the land. And it says here, and this is one of the few places where we see this other name. From here on out, we're going to know this fellow as Yoshua. Same root word, same name, of course, as Yehoshua, as it turns out. But Hosea, and what the sages will say is, what he did is he added the Yah to the front of Hosea's name to remind him Yah comes first, which may not be explicitly the case. We don't have any proof for that, but it certainly makes for a great story, and it certainly fits. And obviously, this is a man who clearly did that. So Moshe says, and sent him to tour, spy out the land of Canaan. He said to him, get you on up there into the south and go up. This is an interesting way to look at it. Go up into the mountains. And I do like the kind of the midrashic understanding of that. Go up into the mountains. Now, they didn't have planes in those days. But as a pilot, I can tell you, if you really want to spy out the land, the way to do it is from high elevation, right? You get in a plane, take a tour over the top of it, and get a good view of the lay of the land. Well, the next best thing is go up in the mountains and look at the big picture from on high. So I guess you could argue that had they done that and taken the big picture view, they might have had a little different result. Go see the land, he said, what it is, the people that dwell therein, whether they're strong or weak, whether they're few or many, and what that land is that they dwell in. Is it good or bad? What are the cities like that they dwell in? Are they in camps or are they in strongholds? And again here, there's some interesting midrash. Rashi, for example, says that the implication is often in this understanding the reverse of what people would say the standard understanding or the common sense interpretation would be. If they're in strongholds, if they're in walled cities, what does that mean? They're weak. If they're strong, they don't need the walled cities. And it's, again, the opposite of appearances. And it's going to be the appearances that the Midrash suggests are going to get these folks into trouble. Back to what they're supposed to look for. See what the land is, whether it's fat or lean, whether there's wood therein or not. And be of good courage. Here's a word that I love, kazak, be strong and of good courage. Bring back the fruit of the land. Now it says, the time that they were getting ready to do this was about the time of the first ripe grapes. So it was mid to later part of summer. So they went up, and they toured out of the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob at the entrance to Hamath. They went up to the south. They came into Hebron. Ahiman, Sheshai, Talmai, the children of Anak were there. Now, Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And then it says they came into the valley of Eshkol. These words are going to have some significance. And they cut down from there a branch from one cluster, one Eshkol, of grapes. So valley is named for cluster of grapes. They bore it on a pole between two men. They also took of the pomegranates and the fig. They took one cluster, one eshkol of grapes, and they had to put it on a pole between two men. That's a good-sized cluster. The place was called the Valley of Eshkol because that's where the cluster that the children of Israel cut down was from there. And then they returned from touring, from spying out the land, after 40 days. And they went out, and they came to Moshe and Aaron and to all the congregation, Kol Ha'edah of the Kahal, the children of B'nai Israel, and unto the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh. They brought back word, and unto all the congregation, they showed them all the stuff that they had gathered, the fruit of the land. They told them, and they said, look, we came into the land where you sent us. And sure enough, it is, in fact, flowing with milk and honey. And here is some of the fruit of it. Now, trouble is, howbeit, the people that dwell in the land are fierce. These are nasty-looking dudes. Cities are fortified and very great. Remember what the Rashiism was, that they're fortified, they're not as strong as they might appear. And moreover, we just heard the verse a couple verses back, the children of Anak there. So these are big dudes. Amalek dwells there in the land of the south, and the Hittite, the Jebusite, and the Amorite, they dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanite dwells by the sea. Later, the name you might hear with some of these sea people would be Philistines, and along the south side of the Jordan. Now, Caleb, he stilled the people toward Moshe, and he said the following, come on, we need to just go on up right at once and possess it. And I like the image of Caleb being a dog, right? Because essentially, this is what a loyal dog does. Yeah, master says, go, let's go, come on, ha ha, we're ready to go, let's go now, and possess it, because we are able to overcome it. So there is a lot of irony in this. The men that went up with him, though, said, oh, no, we can't do that. We are not able to go up against those people because they are stronger than we. And they spread, it says, an evil report. Now, that word here is debat, whispering a defamation. So the implication here is clearly negative. An evil report of the land which they had spied out unto the B'nai Israel, saying, this land through which we have passed to tour it, is, in fact, a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. All the people we saw, these are big dudes. These are men of great stature. Oh, yeah, and we saw the Nephilim there, too, sons of Anak, who come out of the Nephilim. And we were, this is really telling, we were in our own eyes, our own sight, as grasshoppers. And that's how surely we looked to them. That's how we were in their sight. As you expected to be seen, I guess so are you seen. Now, next chapter begins this way, and it says, and all Kol of Ha'edah lifted up their voice, and they cried. All of them, it says. People wept that night. And all of the B'nai Israel murmured against Moshe. There's that word again. They whined. How many times have we seen this? And against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, oh, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we could have died in this wilderness. Well, maybe there's still time for that. Wherefore does Yahuwah bring us into this land? To fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones, they'll be prey. Or wouldn't it just been better for us to just stay and return to Egypt and be good little slaves? They said to one another, let's get ourselves a captain, and we will return Shuv right on back into bondage, right back into Mitzrayim. Now, Moshe and Aaron then fell on their faces. You get the idea. They know something's wrong here. Before Kol of the assembly, all the assembly, the congregation of the B'nai Israel, Meanwhile, Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were of those men that spied out the land, they rent their clothes. They spoke to all of the congregation of the Bnei Israel, and they said, "This land which we passed through to spy out, it's an exceedingly good land." So Joshua and Caleb are telling them the truth. "We were told it's a land flowing with milk and honey." It is. "We were told it's an exceedingly good land." It is. "If Yahuwah delights in us, well then he will do as he said. He will bring us into this land and he'll give it to us. A land which indeed flows with milk and honey. Just don't rebel against Yahuwah. Don't fear the people of the land because they are literally bread for us, meat for us. They are lechem, our bread." In other words, their time is up. "Their defense has been removed over them, and Yahuwah is with us. Do not fear them." But all the congregation, notice this reference here, kol, keep saying all, ha-edah, of the congregation, bade to stone them with stones. When the glory of you, they're scared, and what do they want to do? They want to stone the people that are telling the truth. Ra'am, or ratzam. "When the glory of Yahuwah then appeared in the tent of meeting unto all of the Bnei Israel." Now, let's pause here. And a lot of you know I will point to this as arguably the first example of why it is that Yahuwah is not such a big fan of democracy. Because to me, I will suggest this is the first recorded vote in human history. And as we've already seen, Joshua and Caleb lost 10-2. That would be called a landslide, 10-2. But more importantly, and here I think is the key, and this is part of the thing, remember the consent of the governors, a lot of lessons that the founders and others have taken from Scripture. I can't help but think there is a lot in here that we need to be paying attention to. Notice, it's not just the 10 that are rebelling against Yah that brought the bad report that are going to suffer for this. It keeps telling us over and over again, kol, ha-edah, all of the congregation, over and over. All the congregation lifted up their voice. All of them cried. All of them tried to stone Joshua and Caleb with stones. So there is not just the 10-2, there is also a widespread acceptance of this vote of the word of the spies among the people. So I guess if I was going to draw any conclusion here, it would be, look at that. Everybody was behind them. And they all essentially ratified the vote, if you will, by participating one way or the other, whether it was stoning people or just whining and murmuring and being part of the general rabble that rebelled against Moshe and Aaron and says, "Hey, let's go on back into Egypt." So, Yahuwah then appears unto Moshe, and he said, "How long will this people," now listen, "how long will this people despise me?" They voted against him. They outvoted the creator of the universe. I guess you could say he's probably justified in saying, "How long will they despise me? How long will they not believe me for all the signs which I have wrought among them?" I mean, how is that, right? They have seen the plagues. They have been delivered. They have seen some of the greatest miracles in all of human history. They've seen the parting of the Red Sea. They've seen the manna in the wilderness. They have seen the rock that brings forth water. If there's anybody that I say, you know, maybe by now we ought to trust this Creator that delivered us by a mighty hand and brought us here. No. "How long are they going to not even believe the signs which I have wrought among them?" he says. "I will smite them with pestilence and destroy them." And he tells Moshe, "I'll make from you a nation greater and mightier than they." So all Moses got to do here is just say, "All right, whack them all, let's start over again. Okay, I got some wives. We'll head. It may take a while, but we'll build." Nope, he doesn't say that at all. Moshe responds thusly. He says to Yahuwah, "When the Egyptians hear all of this," now what is he doing here? I always think this is kind of fascinating. He speaks of Moses as not only his prophet and a man that he speaks to literally voice to voice, but his friend and his servant Moshe, who now is going to dicker with him and use logic and essentially show us a little bit of how it is that we interact, or should at least, with the Creator. He says to Yahuwah, "When the Egyptians hear all of this," because remember, "you brought up this people in your might from among them," oh, they'll hear, Then they will say to the inhabitants of this land, who have also heard that you, Yahuwah, are in the midst of this people, for as much as you, Yahuwah, are seen face to face, your cloud stands over them, you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. So this is a pretty tough to ignore sign. Folks around are going to hear this. Now, if you kill all of this, folks, down to one man, then the nations which have heard of your fame will say the following. Here we go. Because Yah just plain wasn't able to bring this people into the land which he swore unto them, therefore he has slain them. He's whacked them all right here in the wilderness. So now, says Moses, I pray you, let the power of Yahuwah be great according to what you have spoken. He is reminding him, Yod-Heh-Vav, of his own word, saying the following. Now here come what are called these 13 attributes of mercy. And it goes like this. Yahuwah is slow to anger, plenteous in loving kindness, chesed, forgiving Torahlessness, iniquity, and transgression. And he will by no means clear the guilty, though, visiting the Torahlessness of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and fourth generation. So he says, pardon, I pray you, the iniquity, the Torahlessness of your people, this people, according unto the greatness of your loving kindness, and according as you have forgiven this people, remember, not for the first time, from Egypt up until now, even until now. Then Yahuwah said, now this is interesting, because Rashi's comment is, why the addendum on the end? He could have just said, I have pardoned. What he says instead is, I have pardoned ke debar echa. Okay, debar, the word, your word, debar echa, and ki, I have pardoned in accord with the way you asked it, your word. Interesting. But in very deed, as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahuwah. Surely, understand this, all of those men that have seen my glory and my signs, which I've wrought in Egypt and here in the wilderness, yet they have put me to the test, they have tried me these 10 times, and they have not hearkened, shamard, unto my voice. Well, guess what? They are not going to see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of them that despised me see it. Now, I come back to this idea of the first recorded vote, the first democratic thing we see in the book. And notice how he describes voting against him and siding with the majority and essentially whining and moaning along with the 10-2. They despised me. They aren't going to see the land that I promised. My servant Caleb, however, because he had a different ruach spirit within him, and he's followed me fully, well, him will I bring into the land wherein he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now, the Amalekite, the Canaanite, dwell in the vale. Tomorrow you turn that way and get you into the wilderness by way of the Red Sea. And Yahuwah then spoke unto Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said, how long will I bear with this evil congregation? They just keep whining, murmuring against me. I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they keep murmuring against me. Boy, he doesn't like this word. He doesn't like what they're doing anyway. And he says, say to them, as I live, says Yahuwah, surely, as you have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you. You asked for it, you got it. Your carcasses will fall here in the wilderness. And all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and up, 603,550, save those two, that have murmured against me, surely you shall not come into the land wherefore concerning which I lifted up my hand, that I would make you dwell therein, except for the two, Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun, using his new name. But your little ones, the ones you said would be a prey, them will I bring into the land. And they shall know the land firsthand that you rejected. As for you, your carcasses are going to fall here, Bamidbar, in this wilderness. And your children, they will be wanderers in this desert, in this wilderness for 40 years. They will bear your strings until your carcasses are consumed, Bamidbar. After the number of days in which you spied out the land, every day, 1 year. 40 days, for every day a year, you shall bear your Torahlessness 40 years, and then you will know my displeasure. For I, you who have spoken, surely this will I do unto all this evil congregation that are gathered against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed, and here they, you, shall die. Now, the men whom Moshe sent to tour, spy out the land, and who, when they returned, made cold Ha'edah, all of the congregation, to murmur against him. We're a democracy! Yeah, let's all do it! By bringing up an evil report, a slander, a defamation, they didn't believe him, against the land. Those men that brought up that evil report of the land, they didn't make it. They died by a plague before Yahuwah. So they didn't last for 40 days. They were gone. But Joshua, son of Nun, Caleb, son of Jephunneh, they remained alive of those men, of the 12, only two, that went to spy out the land. So Moshe told these words unto the B'nai Israel, and guess what? They mourned greatly. So they got up in the morning, they got out to the top of the mountain, they said, all right, here we are. That's a little bit late, maybe, but here we are. We will go up into the place that Yahuwah has promised, because we've sinned. Moshe said, why are you now again, basically, transgressing the commandment of Yahuwah? Because it ain't going to work, seeing that it shall not prosper. Do not go up there, because Yahuwah is not among you, that you not be smitten down before your enemies. Because you know what? You were scared of those folks yesterday. The Amalekite, the Canaanite, they're before you. You shall fall by the sword. For as much as you've turned back from following Yahuwah, he will not be with you. You could have done it. But he's not going to be with you at this point. But they presume to go ahead and go on up anyway. And isn't that funny? When he tells them, go, they don't go. And when he tells them, don't you think about going up there on your own, you fools, because now you've blown it, they're going to go up anyway. So they did. Nevertheless, the Ark of the Covenant of Yahuwah and Moshe did not depart out of the camp. And then, here come the Amalekite and the Canaanite. They dwelt in the hill country. They came down, and they smote them. And they beat them down all the way back unto Hormah. So at this point it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel, say the following. When you come into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you, now it's not going to be immediately, we now know it's going to be 40 years, then you will make an offering by fire unto Yahuwah, a burnt offering, right, an olah, or a sacrifice, zebach, in fulfillment of a vow clearly uttered, or as a free will offering, when you do any of these things, or in your appointed seasons, you make a sweet savor unto Yahuwah of the herd or of the flock, then shall he that brings his offering present unto Yahuwah a meal offering, tenth part of an ephah, fine flour mingled with a fourth part of a hin of oil. So he's going to describe something that I think we've seen before, but there's a reason for it, right? The question is, what is it? Wine for a drink offering, fourth part of a hin, shall you prepare for the burnt offering, the olah, or for the sacrifice for each lamb. For a ram, you'll prepare for a meal offering, two-tenths part of an ephah of fine flour mingled with now a third part of a hin of oil, so bigger for the ram. For the drink offering, you shall present a third part of a hin of wine, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. When you prepare a bullock for a burnt offering or a sacrifice, or in fulfillment of a vow clearly uttered, or for shalamim unto Yahuwah, then there shall be presented with that bullock a meal offering of three-tenths part of an ephah of fine flour, mingled with half a hin of oil. So, bigger animal still, a little bit bigger meal offering that goes with it. Then you present for the drink offering half a hin of wine, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. This, it says, is what shall be done for each bullock, or for each ram, or for each of the he-lambs, or of the kids. According to the number that you may prepare, so shall you do for everyone according to their number. All that are homeborn shall do in these things after like manner, by presenting an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Now, if a stranger, if he's sojourning with you, or somebody comes among you throughout your generations and would like to make an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, just like you do, okay, he can do that. He will do likewise. As for the congregation, there will be one statute. Now, this is hucha echat. So, one statute, both for you and for the stranger that dwells, sojourns with you. It's a statute forever throughout your generations. As you are, so shall the stranger be before Yahuwah. So it's interesting. You'll hear the translation, one law for you and the stranger that dwells among you. Okay, I don't have a huge problem with that, but the word where it's Torah is better rendered as instruction. But what's interesting is in this case, it says one huch, a huchat echad, echad. So it is, in fact, one instruction, and in this case, it is a specific That's a commandment, a statute. In other words, it's do it because I say so. And it is the same for you and the stranger. One Torah, now we see in verse 16, one instruction and one ordinance, and that word is mishpat, shall be both for you and for the stranger that sojourns among you. So here's the bigger understanding of this. It's not just one law, one ordinance. It is, in fact, one instruction, which is bigger than all of these pieces. And yes, the law aspect, the ordinance, the statute, that too is the same for you and the stranger that sojourns among you. Then it says, Yahweh spoke to Moshe and said, speak unto the Bnei Israel, tell them the following. When you come into the land, whither I'm bringing you, then it shall be, when you eat the bread of this land, that you shall set apart a portion for a gift unto Yahuwah. First day of the first of your dough, you set apart a cake for a gift. That which is set apart of the threshing floor, so you shut it apart. On the first of your dough, you shall give unto Yahuwah a portion for a gift throughout your generations. Now, if, and actually Rashi says, if you shall err, and sometimes it's rendered as when you shall err, but I guess the implication is it's going to happen. And you do not observe all these commandments which Yahuwah has spoken unto Moshe, even all that Yahuwah has commanded you by the hand of Moshe, from the day that Yahuwah gave commandment and onward throughout your generations. So if or when you err, then it shall be. Okay, if it's done in error by the congregation, and it's hid from their eyes, so this is what? Unintentional sin. All the congregation shall offer one young bull for a burnt offering, for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, with the meal offering thereof, the drink offering thereof, according to the ordinance, and one he-goat for a chatat, a sin offering. Now the Kohen shall make atonement for kol ha'edah, all the congregation of the Bnei Israel. They'll be forgiven, because it was an error. And they have brought their offering, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah, and their chatat, their sin offering, before Yahuwah, for that error. And all of the congregation of Israel shall be forgiven. And a stranger that sojourns among them, for in respect of all the people, it was done in error. He is emphasizing this. It's clear. They made a mistake. It was done in error. There is something you do to rectify it, and it's okay. It's done in error. Now, if one person sins through error, then he shall offer a she-goat first year for a chatat, and the priest shall make atonement for the soul that errs when he sins through error before Yahuwah to make atonement for him. Then he shall be forgiven. Both he that is homeborn among the Bnei Israel and the stranger that sojourns among them, you shall have Torah Echat, one instruction, both for him that does something in error and the stranger, whether they're stranger or homeborn, one instruction for both. They do it in error. But wait a minute. Verse 30 says this, but the soul, the nefesh, the life, that does something with a high hand, the hell with you and the horse you rode on in on, right? Does something with a high hand, a haughty hand, presumptuously. There's a lot of ways to render this, but you get the idea, right? You see it. As a matter of fact, all the time. I saw it this week. Somebody says, oh, yeah, when I feel like it, I just like to piss people off that are Torah keepers, so I show them how I eat a bacon sandwich. I would say that's sinning presumptuously with a high hand. Or when that same person blasphemes Yahuwah. He doesn't know what he's talking about. That law's all done away with. Well, he didn't say that. He said opposite. All right, that same person, when they blaspheme Yahuwah, presumptuously, with a high hand, that soul, it says, by the way, this is the first use of this word that is translated as blasphemeth in the Hebrew, from the Hebrew into English, and it's migdof. He, that soul, shall be cut off from among his people because he has despised, here's the second time we've seen it, despised the word of Yahuwah. He's broken his commandment. That soul shall utterly be cut off. His impurity, his iniquity, his Torahlessness shall be upon him. Now, this is interesting because immediately we get this little story. This is going to, by the way, essentially wrap up the portion. While the children of Israel were there, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, they found a man. He's out doing what? Gathering sticks on the Sabbath day. Well, it could be an error. Is it? Or does he know better? Is he acting with a high hand, presumptuously? I think the story is going to help make that clear. They found him gathering sticks. They brought him unto Moshe and Aaron, and to Kol Ha'edah, congregation, and they put him in a ward. They locked him up just to see what should be done with him, because it hadn't yet been said. So Yahuwah then said unto Moshe, Here we go. Words in red. This man shall surely be put to death. All of the kol ha edah. Boy, that word, that expression has appeared in this Torah portion a lot, hasn't it? All of them are going to die in the wilderness, all those above the age, all those who participated, all those who whined. Here's a man gathering sticks. They should have all known better. He acted with a heavy hand. All of the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. And it says all of the congregation brought him outside the camp. They stoned him with stones, and he died as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. Now, let's see here. I'm going to suggest, folks, what was the issue here? He was doing something which had been commanded not to be done on the Sabbath day. The Sabbath day that the whole church did away with. The Sabbath day that people say doesn't matter for squat anymore. The Sabbath day that he mentions over and over and over and over and over again and has just shown you there is a death penalty associated with guys who, with a high hand, deliberately violate it, presumptuously. You could almost say in his face. He died as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. And then we get this. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel and tell them, here's what they need to do. Make with for them throughout their generations fringes. Now that word here is tzitzit, fringes. And that's, by the way, what these little things are called in English. You'll see people with the little strings hanging down in the corners of their garments. And that they put with the fringe, with the tzitzit, on each corner, a thread of blue. And this word is tekelet. And it's if you've ever seen the blue thread, at least what the sages say is the right color here, it's a really royal, deep blue color. And there's a whole lot of lore that goes with it, having to do with these little snails that they make the dye out of and all that kind of jazz. But the commandment is, when they make... Bid them that they make this thing. Do it throughout their generations. And it needs to have a blue thread. So there's blue thread in each one of these things on each of the corners of the garment. And then we get this. Now this is always fascinating. I can't help but think, when we see a commandment, but then we see something that is told to us about the commandment, it always kind of makes it not just more interesting, but I think it brings it home. Here we go. They shall look unto it, and it shall be that when... you look upon it, this fringe, this tzitzit, you may look upon it, and the point, that you zakar, remember, kol, all, of the mitzvot of Yahuwah, so that you can do them. And here comes the ribbon that is now tying the whole Torah portion together, so that you do not go about touring after your own heart and your own eyes, spying after. Don't let your eyes, the pride of your eyes, I mean, it's really kind of funny. Don't go, do you think there's some kind of a message here? The point of the tzitzit is you look upon him and you zakar, you remember his commandments. So you don't go touring around like the spies did, spying around after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you tend to go astray. Funny. So instead, what's the point of the tzitzit? So that you remember and do all of my mitzvot. So mitzvoti, my commandments, and be set apart unto your Elohim. Now, to my mind, and I think this is just kind of the nature of Torah, this is a really powerful ending to this entire parsha. We've had the story of the spies who were told, go check out the land, bring back a report. They brought back an evil report. They held the first recorded vote in Scripture, and all these people went whining and joined up with them and essentially said, to hell with the God of the Bible. We don't trust him, at least not until it's too late, then we'll go up and get our heads handed to ourselves. Now, we're going to go after this bad report, and as a result, our carcasses are going to hang out to dry, and we're going to die here in the wilderness. And then what? We see a man who is despised with a high hand. He literally violates the commandment concerning Sabbath, gathering sticks on the Sabbath. He is stoned. And we get this reminder. Throughout your generations, little blue thread in the four corners of your garments, so that you can look upon it and remember, cull all of the commandments of Yahuwah and do them. So that you don't go around touring, spying after your own heart, your own eyes, which tend to lead you astray. Gee, is there a consistent message here? So that you can do all of my commandments, which are set apart unto Yahuwah, like what? Like we should be. Be holy because I am holy. And then he does this. He signs it. The signature line, we saw it throughout the Exodus. Here it is. Ani Yahuwah Elohim. I am Yahuwah your El, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your El. And he repeats it. Ani Yahuwah Elohim. And I guess at that, all I can say is Amen ve Amen. All right, so that is the end of the Torah portion. And it's a powerful Torah portion. Of course, the spies is one of the more famous stories of the land, because as a result of the spies, they didn't go into the Promised Land. They ended up hanging around until all of the men over the age of 20 who were part of the generation that rebelled and didn't believe him because they despised his word, they died there in the wilderness. Died Bamidbar.